Welcome back, WNST and Baltimore Positive. We are back at State Fair. We're eating, having some coffee, doing a doubleheader today. It's been quite the day here. Don Moeller joining us. I'm going to let you do this because when we get these educated people, I stand in awe of all of you teacher types, you know. So I'll let you do the honors.
You feel like you're back in ninth grade, do you?
Well, I still want to get called to the principal's office when I'm in front of two principals.
Well, I was going to say, you have a good principal right here.
Well, I'm going to tell you. And Esther, what can I say? We have just another Harvard PhD. Seems like a weekly occurrence. Nestor and I have decided that somehow we were in another room when you all were getting these PhDs from Harvard.
And you're probably better for it. You're probably better for
Dr. Sonia Santelices, thank you so much. One of the true leaders in public education across the nation. I think that's safe to say.
Oh, you are kind. You are kind.
Doing great work in Baltimore City.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for being here. You know, one of the things... I told you ahead of time, I want to get into your TED Talk a little bit, a few minutes. But before we do that, tell folks who are listening and watching, we always like to find out, here you are, this incredibly successful woman. I think your sister is a college professor.
Yes, she is.
So we got two young girls that grew up in Peabody, Massachusetts.
Oh, you did do your homework.
And, you know, here you are, you're both going to be successful. Talk to us a little bit about growing up in Peabody, what it was in that home that created these two women of achievement.
Well, and I think, you know, no one will be surprised. You all won't be surprised. I mean, a lot of it was, one, having parents that really valued education, but also who valued learning, period, right? So it was always important to do well in school, but it was also important to learn outside of school, right? So it was walking in the forest behind our house, right? It was having different experiences and exposure, and having two parents who grew up you know, in the Jim Crow South, they both took kind of different approaches to that. So for my mom, it was about exposure and experiences and how do you see the world beyond just who you are and actually see your connection, right? And so, you know, going to plays and libraries and all those kinds of things.
Boston offered that.
Sure. And that was the great part about, you know, and then growing up in a household with Southern parents, but in New England.
Yeah, that's really weird, man. That's like, that's a total, for your parents had some interesting courage
came
about
from
them.
Mississippi.
Yes.
Boston.
That's right. I mean, it was.
Well,
so.
I mean, I'm going to ask you, you're African American.
Absolutely.
Being there, Southern accent.
That's right, which I don't have.
What did they encounter?
Well, and you know, there have actually been stories that they have told and have been written up about when they came to the Boston area at first.
It was 70s, 80s, where were we talking
about? Yeah, 60s.
60s, okay.
Right? So that, you know, had a lot of stuff around busing that came later, a lot of housing discrimination and things like that. But I think what's great about their story is that even in the midst of all the challenge, there were people there to support them who were also from New England, right? So it was never kind of this monolithic blanket, you know, people
not
that
like a true immigrant where you would come in and not really have anyone.
That's right. I mean, people, you know, they found people along the way. So we had, for example, you know, a Methodist minister who lived the apartment below us who, you know, welcomed them into the neighborhood and we went to their house. We had a Jewish family down the street.
But you were born there though.
We were born there.
Okay.
We were born
there.
You
don't know anything else.
I don't know anything else except I spent my summers in the South. So I actually...
My mom was from South Carolina.
Oh, you're kidding.
In the summer, I go to South Carolina and chase crickets. There's nothing else to do.
So you know. And in the summer, I went to Georgia and Mississippi. And so you had this New England kid playing in the red Southern clay, right? And, you know, I remember when my grandfather took me to my first pig slaughter when I was four, and he thought it was going to be a big deal, and I burst out in tears, right?
You thought it was bacon.
Bacon, and then I see this large carcass, and... burst out in
just
tears.
What a four-year-old
that's exactly
to see.
Right.
Thanks, Granddad.
So no, really, it was so. But this whole idea of, you know, multiple worlds, but family was really important. School and learning were really important. Faith was really important. But it was nice because I was grounded in, yes, you know, the traditions of being African-American and in our particular family. But also, again, we had a lot of exposure to a lot of different kinds of people. So. You know, like I went to Irish step dancing class once with one of my friends from, you know, high school. And, you know, I went to, you know, bat mitzvahs with Jewish friends.
Sure.
And so, like, there was always this.
So you really weren't integrated, more so than some of us.
Yes, more so than had I grown up like my parents grown up, right?
Sure.
And so, but yes, there were also still challenges, but I got to see both sides. I got to see the challenges side, and I also got to see the beauty of being able to interact with people that are different from you, but also the challenge of, you know, still being Black in America. So it was a balance, but I think the balance makes it easier for me not to just brand everybody the same, but to be able to appreciate. And so in Baltimore City, when we talk about kids needing windows and mirrors, they need to be able to see themselves and appreciate themselves. But I also want them to have exposure to kind of the different parts of just the world and our country and know that they have a place in it too.
You get to Baltimore. I'm, you know, we're here, and the reason we did Baltimore Positive was talking about making the city better.
Yeah.
And obviously crime, obviously policing, obviously where our money goes and our tax, those issues. But as a citizen, the thing I'm most concerned about is education, because I think that truly is the ticket out. That's the thing that's going to change everything. We've had Nancy Grasmick up the street at Jennings.
Yeah.
And again, Don was my high school guidance counselor in 1982.
Oh, see, I didn't know that part of the
connection. I met him on my first day of high school in 1982. And all these years later, the things that I learned are what's powered everything I've ever done. And I saw you on TV maybe 6 months ago on Channel 11. There was a little bit of a education crisis city kind of thing that I think Jason hosted. You were on Stools, and saw you on that with others, and I said, that's why I want to do Baltimore, because right at the dawn of Baltimore, it was like maybe in April, and I said, I want to have her on. So 6 months later, here you are. So I've really been looking forward to this. Coming into this, when you find Baltimore as an educational environment, tell a citizen what the biggest challenges are. And I don't think you're Superman or Superwoman.
Thank
I don't
God.
Think there's any teacher that is.
No.
But you're in charge. And somebody has to be in charge. And Don and I, when you used the restroom before the segment, and we're like, whew, she got a tough job. You know, I mean, like literally. I mean, we said that privately. And I mean that as a citizen. Yeah. But I don't really know what you do. But this is the hour I want to learn.
Yeah.
You know, because there's schools up and down the street. I see kids. And I live in the city. And you know, we're all concerned about tests and grading and all that, but just producing good human beings in our city. That's really what this is about.
Without a doubt. And that's what families tell us. That's what students tell us, right? So my first year when I was out kind of listening to parents and young people and community members and saying, you know, so tell me what we're doing well and what we're not doing well. And one of the overarching themes, which has become a focus for us, is that I heard over and over again, my kids are more than their test scores. I heard from young people things like, yeah, I'll do your algebra and that's fine, but like I actually love art, and I only have two art classes in my high school, right? So part of, I think, the push that we have tried to have over the last couple of years is how do we recalibrate, recenter our work around making sure that we're addressing the needs of kids as whole people, right? So what are their social emotional needs? What are their needs to find out who they are, right? Like having extracurriculars. I was not a big athlete, which I shouldn't say to a sports broadcaster. I wasn't a big athlete, but you know what? I could figure that out because in my school, right, I could take advantage of different athletic opportunities. And so we've invested back in to our athletics department. And we've partnered, you know, with a variety of people, you know, from Under Armour and some local businesses to really reinvest in athletics, because kids have different connection points to schools. And so when we talk to families, yes, they want them well-educated. And yes, they want to know that they're equipped to do anything and everything. But most parents, most families, and you all know this, are like, I want my child to be able to earn a living when they leave. I want my child to be healthy, right? Emotionally, I want them to feel part of a community and ultimately to be great citizens, right? And to be able to contribute to their world. And so instead of starting with just test scores, right? Or just what's happening, we've had to spend a lot of time quite frankly, like building up, what do we mean when we say healthy school cultures? And I know you all know a bit about that because you had Chris Battaglia on, but, you know, what does it mean to be a healthy space for young people to come, particularly at a time when our city does have challenges and our young people know what those challenges are. But quite frankly, like a lot of our kids find healing, so to speak, in a music class, right? Not necessarily, you know, in any formal setting, or they find it as being part of a girls' mentoring group. We have a number of them. One of our school police officers, Betty Covington, and another, our teacher of the year, LaQuisha Hall, they both run mentoring groups for young girls. And, you know, those young girls are connecting as...
That stuff didn't exist 30 years ago,
it
right?
Didn't.
It didn't exist when you were a girl, right?
No. But we need it more now. And I think all kids need it more, particularly because of social media and isolation. But our young people in Baltimore City, I can't go in any zip code in our city and not get agreement that we need young people to have a variety of entry points to school. And for, you know, I learned this as a teacher in Bed-Stuy, right? And I was so into my humanities class that I was teaching, and a wise veteran principal, probably somebody like you, Don, right? A wise veteran principal said to me, Sonia, I hate to tell you this, but that this young man who I was, you know, trying to get his writing up, he's actually not coming to school for you. He's coming to school because he's got to get through you to get to his trumpet.
Right.
Fair enough.
And that's his connection point.
You know, I can tell you already. We're going to have a return visit from Dr. St. Elise's, because there's so much. As you're talking, my head is exploding. One of the things that you're really alluding to, I think, and I always believed this at my core, was that you hook kids and get them to buy into the bigger picture by having them care about something and someone at that school. It may
Absolutely.
Be ROTC, it may be band, it
That's
may
right.
be theater, it
That's
may
right.
be the paper. What's that hook for each
it's
kid?
It's your best
That's
friend,
right.
it's your girlfriend, it's the kids
yes.
you sit in class, it's the lunch kids you
yes.
visit with,
yes.
right?
Yeah, and so, you know, one of the things we heard from parents is, you know, 15-minute quick lunches, to your point. You know, kids feel like they're being pushed through
right.
almost assembly lines. And so when do you get
we
to actually
We used to run
interact?
To the cafeteria to get in line so we could get our food. Otherwise, we'd be in line for
Absolutely.
20 minutes.
Well,
think about it. And I know you know the person I'm about to mention. And I mention it almost every week. I love the whole concept when you can show folks it's not the kids. Because I would say to anyone, you mentioned it just a few minutes ago. I don't care what family unit you're talking about or two, the poorest of the poor, the most challenged of the challenged, when you ask for their goals and aspirations from the mom, the dad, the aunt, the uncle, the grandmom that's, right. that's raising them, they're identical
yes.
to the kid living in Delaney Valley or living yeah. in Catonsville. They're not different.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I think that's part of where we veered off the path a bit, particularly in urban education. For a number of years, we kind of stripped down the curriculum. We stripped down. We said, oh, because you're behind in reading, oh. right? We got to take everything else.
We're going to make it
easier for you. Well, we're going to make it easier. You're absolutely right. Was one.
We're not going to give you the fun stuff.
But we're not going to give you the fun stuff.
Right.
Right. And so we took away from kids who were behind, right, the ability to go on a school trip, right? So we took away field trips because we got to drill you in XYZ. Instead of, which is part of the other piece we're doing in city schools, is saying, how do we get more effective in our teaching so that we're using our time, we're using students' time well, and then we don't have to strip all this other stuff, which we thought was, you know, just kind of added bonus, is actually part of the mix. Exactly, right? So the intramural pieces, and then like in one of my favorites is in elementary school in a lot of cities, we stopped teaching science for a while. Well, I got to tell you, you all know this. We got some wiggly little boys
How
sitting on mats.
Why?
Right?
Why
some
is
wiggly
that?
Little boys. That's a good description.
I mean, we do.
But who goes to a board of education and says we're not going to teach science to young people?
Well, but you
I
know
mean,
what?
I heard first
but it's probably well-meaning,
right?
Right? Dr. Santelisa? It's probably well-meaning.
It was well-meaning. Right. I think people thought, well, if we really just do reading, they'll get reading.
And then they can figure science out later.
And then they'll figure science out later. The problem is, and you know this, learning all the vocabulary in science actually helps make you a better reader. And so those wiggly little boys I was talking about on the mat, when you talk to them about insects, when they get to read books about sports, when they can actually figure out the chemistry of food and, you know, gloop or whatever it is, right? Like when you get to do those kinds of things, then you actually see the connection in when you're sitting on the mat for the reading lesson, right? And so we took all of that out in order to kind of catch kids up, and we took away some of the most important connective tissue to learning. And so that's been a heavy focus for us, is how do we get that kind of learning along with the extracurriculars, the arts and music, back into what I call an enriching education, not just how do I go to school?
Well, you know, we had so much to unpack there. We had Sarah Heminger on.
Oh, good, good.
A few weeks
back. Everybody knows Sarah. I have one guest on.
Right.
That's all I love, Thread.
Right. Yeah, she must be everywhere.
She is.
Those of you who are still looking for holiday giving, thread.org, they can use your help. Wonderful program. But where I'm going with that is that now in 15 years, almost 540 kids through their program. Nobody's left. They've surrounded them. They've created a family that, as you know, to put around them. Every single kid who were the most challenging entering ninth grade, not only did they get through, they excelled, and they've all gone to college.
Yes.
So that's a pretty wide selection in terms of a focus group where almost 600 kids have been successful. So it tells me it's not the kids.
And again, and if we could keep saying that, if you could keep saying that, that would be worth its weight in gold. Because I do think that sometimes we slip into exactly what you're saying, that this narrative that, well, the kids are this or the kids are that. And yeah, there are kids who need to be in different settings, but they are such a small portion of the population. We have kids who don't make it in one school, but go to a different school, and they're fine. The other piece that I think you just pointed out in the Thread analogy that's really important is this idea of relationships. And we have been thinking long and hard about how do we build back meaningful relationships between young people and adults when so many young people, if we're honest in our city, have broken relationships with adults that don't trust. And frankly, given some of the stories
they've been let down by adults.
Absolutely, for very good reason. You're absolutely right. Like, I understand why they don't. And so
we've all been let down by adults.
Even as adults,
yeah,
right?
But when you're a child, you don't understand it.
No, you don't. And then
I didn't understand. I mean, I had parents that were, you know, it was a mess. You know? So I had other people to pick me up.
Yes. And that piece there, the other people, right, to pick you up, that's what I think we're taking another real look at deeply. And so one of the goals, even though it's a very ambitious goal for us, is, you know, within the next 5 to 7 years, we want to be able to say every young person, particularly in grades 6 through 12, right, so middle and high school student, should have at least one nurturing, mentoring
game
relationship
changer
with an adult, right, that helps them navigate life between 6th and 12th
grade. Well,
it's
the only way they're going to get there and not wind up in a really bad circumstance.
Agreed.
Because it is a grandmother, it is an aunt, it is a neighbor, it is a teacher,
yes,
it is a coach, it is an uncle. It's,
yes.
It's something like that for everyone. That's not black, white, young, old American. That's anywhere.
That's being
that's
human.
Humanity.
That's
yeah,
right. That's
well,
being human.
You know, it's interesting, and there are so many examples that I can think of an example at Dundalk High, I can think of an example at Sparrows Point Middle. At Sparrows Point Middle, we did something that people thought we would had actually lost our minds, and Chris Battaglia was probably there at the time. But it was a small middle school. It was 550 or whatever it was. And every year you'd have 20 or 30 kids. And that's what you asked earlier about attendance, who just were attendance problems. They wouldn't come to school. So it was over 6th, 7th, 8th grade. It was probably a core of about 30 that were a problem. So we got a whole group of teachers, because you get people together, they have great ideas. And they said, Don, a couple of them stepped forward and said, put them all in my homeroom. Everybody's going, what are you talking about? Put them all in my homeroom. We'll get them to school.
Yeah.
Give me one other ticket.
And
all of a sudden, the 20 or 30 worst attendance kids, you know what they did? They went to the phone in the morning. They called them. They called them that night. You better be up tomorrow.
Well, this is what Thread does.
We're going to send somebody to get you.
Yes.
So all of a sudden, going to your point, if you can create that, those kids' lives are changed because somebody said, put them in my room.
Well, having an adult that cares,
makes a huge difference.
Well, I'm not in your circumstance, and we're going to have to take a break, but I want to come back and talk about Baltimore and what you found when you got here what you hope to leave when you leave, whatever that is.
That's right. That's right.
We're going to come back. We're going to talk about that. I have to talk about Dr. St. Elise's TED Talk. Looked at it again today. Spectacular TED Talk. I want to go through the principles there. Nestor, we got a lot to talk about. Not a lot of time. Where are we?
We are at State Fair. We're in Catonsville. We'll be back at Jennings up the street soon, having a Jennings burger. In the meantime, I'm doing the chicken and waffles thing here. Probably some shrimp and grits before it's all over.
I got an
English muffin over there that's got butter on it waiting for me. So we're also going to be down at Fadley's with Police Commissioner Harrison on December the 12th. That's the day the Jets play the Ravens. Make sure you're checking that. And we got a bunch of episodes. It's Baltimore Positive. We have Baltimore City Schools CEO Sonia St. Elise is joining us here. We are at State Fair. We're back for more on WNST and Baltimore Positive right after this.